singing, just the hand claps.
Singing was good.
I like the singing.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanituck, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theatre in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wayfarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of the Braver family in Leeds, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Pat Ryan again said on January 23rd that Central Hudson should not get its rate approval request approved by the Public Service Commission. On January 24th, Central Hudson proposed a double-digit rate request went before an Albany evidentiary hearing. Before that, Ryan said in a statement, and I quote, "Hudson Valley families are feeling the pressure of making ends meet. Central Hudson has absolutely no business raising rates, especially after years of systematic failures," end quote. Central Hudson is asking New York Public Service Commission to increase rates by 16% and natural gas rates by 19%. The utility claims that would add roughly $1 a day to the, and I quote, typical, end quote, electric customer and $1 a day to the, and I quote, typical, end quote, natural gas customer. The Public Service Commission is not expected to decide on the rate increase until the second quarter of the year. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Representative Elise Stefanik has had a week of national headlines. Salon reports Stefanik, who represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District, called the cancellation of the January 22nd trial proceedings in writer E. Jean Carroll's defamation trial against Donald Trump, and I quote, "blatant election interference," end quote. After a juror called in sick, the judge wanted to continue, but Trump attorney Alina Haba asked for an adjournment. So Stefanik is calling Trump's attorney's motion to delay the trial, and I quote, "blatant election interference," end quote. Stefanik is also mentioned by comedian Jimmy Kimmel, who spoke on January 22nd about Trump talking about her after her name was floated as possible vice president.
Trump also can't seem to pronounce the name of his possible running mate, Elise Stefanik.
Do you see that, the three people? How good did Elise Stefanik do?
I love that little pause when he sees the name on the teleprompter. He's like, oh, here we go, Elise Stefanik, dude.
Brian Campbell reports for New York State of Politics that the National Endowment for the Arts has more than $8 million for nearly 300 grants to organizations across New York State. Senator Chuck Schumer and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand announced on January 24th. Wave Farm in Accra, WGXC's parent organization, is among the recipients. Wave Farm receives $25,000 towards its artist residency program. The Thomas Cole House in Catskill got $30,000 for various programs. The Hudson Opera House got $15,000 to, and I quote, support multidisciplinary arts programming, end quote. New York Senator Chuck Schumer said, and I quote, art, music, and humanities, along with community organizations, cultural groups, and nonprofits, are the lifeblood of New York communities, big and small. From the Thomas Cole House to the Buffalo Philharmonic, an investment in the arts is an investment in New York's future as both a tourist destination and a vibrant place to live, end quote. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button. To become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
To say that we're just going to call it after two states, 40 right. states to go, the head of the Republican Party saying we don't want to hear from all the other Republicans in the nation because it's getting too close, that's nonsense.
New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu says voters should decide the Republican presidential nominee, not Washington elites. Party leaders are pressing Nikki Haley to drop out after losing in New Hampshire. Haley says the race is far from over, but former President Donald Trump is locking down support in the former South Carolina governor's home state. Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry has approved a new court-ordered congressional map, creating a second majority black district. Democratic State Senator Gerald Boudreau says this could mark the end of a years-long redistricting battle, with his party picking up a seat.
This gives us that unity that's needed. I think it brings us all under one umbrella, and it gives us opportunity to plan.
Wisconsin Republicans seem to want to avoid having the liberal-controlled state Supreme Court redraw their maps. Both GOP-led chambers quickly introduced and approved new electoral districts. Democrats charged they're moving so fast to deny them time to respond, but Republican Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu says the maps won't change the partisan breakdown.
And frankly, a veto of this bill by the governor, if he decides to go down the road of vetoing, will just show his true intent of trying to disenfranchise Republican voters around the state.
Academics charge the state has some of the most gerrymandered districts in the country, but state Supreme Court justices say they'll defer to the legislature if it can pass maps Democratic Governor Tony Evers will sign. A transgender candidate running for an Ohio State House seat has been cleared to run, despite failing to previously disclose her birth name. Democratic hopeful Ariane Childress says what she calls her dead name no longer aligns with her gender identity, but she wants her campaign to show that all voices matter.
Hopefully those people will see, you know, this is a marginalized community in Ohio, and yet we're still standing.
New York City police are investigating a possible chemical attack on Columbia University students protesting the Israeli war in Gaza.
Not a penny, not a dollar!
Not a penny, not a dollar!
We won't pay for any more slaughter!
We won't pay for any more slaughter!
Students reported being sprayed with a foul-smelling liquid. 8 students were hospitalized. Students allege the attack was carried out by 2 former members of the Israeli military on campus. No arrests have been made. A bipartisan group of Kansas lawmakers have introduced a resolution condemning last year's police raid on a weekly newspaper. The Marion County Record had been investigating the town's police chief, who later resigned. Lawmakers are asking the state attorney general to see if civil rights were violated. And the Supreme Court will not intervene to stop Alabama from executing a death row inmate today using nitrogen gas, the first time the method will be used in the U.S. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, filling in for Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, January 25th. Local early morning temperatures range from 34 in Medusa to 42 in Copaic. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees, and some places yesterday recorded an inch of accumulation of snow, including Red Hook, Woodstock, and Halcott Center. Leftover rain comes to an end by noontime today. We get a high of 48 degrees at 1 p.m. Enjoy the afternoon because we get fresh rain overnight along with a low of 37 degrees. Tomorrow should be rainy most, if not all day long, ending in the afternoon. We'll get a high of 42 degrees. Overnight it dips to 35, bouncing back up to 43 degrees Saturday afternoon. Sunday is looking like a bunch of mixed precipitation all day long with a high of 37. Sunset.
Oh, so the weather cut off today. I'm not sure what's wrong with the better weather. It's not quite as better as usual. But I'm Tom Rowe, and you're listening to the WGXC Morning Show. And now we are joined by Roger Hannigan-Gilson, the Hudson Valley reporter for the Times Union, talking about what he's been reporting on this week. How are you doing this week, Roger?
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you?
All right. So you have been wading through the South Bay this week.
Yes. Not literally, thankfully. You know, my legs would get cold. But, essentially, there's a couple stories on the South Bay area. The most recent one had to do with Route 25B/9G. That's the main road leading from the Rip Van Winkle Bridge into Hudson. It's flooded twice in the last 2 months, one on December 18th and once a couple weeks ago. And, you know, for anyone who lives in Hudson, it's not like an uncommon occurrence. I was unable to get how many times like a year it floods, but it's been suggested like four or more. And when this happens, I mean, it's not like the city is completely cut off from the outside world, thankfully. You know, the Department of Transportation, the State Department of Transportation, it's their road, has to send people out to barricade it out and redirect traffic. Traffic coming from the bridge needs to go a bit east and north to take 9. But the interesting thing about it is, like, why it floods and why it's going to be more of an issue in the future. Essentially, the road goes through the South Bay, which is south of Hudson, and it's a tidal, wetlands. So since the Hudson River is tidal, but it's at sea level, the kind of wetlands around the road fill and drain on a daily basis with the tides. When there's like a major rain event, we're not talking like a hurricane or anything, we're just talking about like a big rainstorm. What happens is the Hudson floods a bit, it you know, goes up in level, and the swamp is filled. And water coming from the Hudson through the swamp crashes into water coming off Mount Marino, which is this hill. It's like 400-foot hill right outside town. And they kind of crash together right on top of the road. And there's a couple pictures in the article of just the road flooded. And it's not like, you know, a 20-foot section of the road floods, sometimes like hundreds of yards of the road floods. There's no way to get through it. So that's why it floods. Why this might become more of an issue, well, it's projected to be more of an issue in the future because the Hudson River is rising. As sea level, the sea level off the northeast coast rises, since the Hudson is tidal, since it's basically at sea level, you know, the river rises too. So the Hudson River is projected to rise 2 to 4 feet by 2080 and as much as 6 feet by 2100, which is a ways off, but, you know, we tried to prepare. And the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, yeah, I think I got that right, projects, it has this great tool, it's linked in the article, it's a sea level rise mapper, and even 3 feet of sea level rise would cause the road to be be permanently inundated, as in it would flood every day, a couple times a day at high tide. This is without any rain. So, you know, in a few decades, yeah, the road could be inaccessible a couple times a day. So something, you know, needs to be done about this. It's a few years off, but it's not like it's going to, you know, not be an issue and then a few decades all of a sudden be an issue. It's just that it's the road is going to flood more and more often through the coming years, and in the Department of Transportation is going to have to shut it down more and more often. There's a couple culverts under this section of the road that are supposed to bring like the water from the Hudson to the other side of the wetlands underneath the road, but they just get overwhelmed. And it's slightly complicated by the fact that the wetlands on both sides of the road are they're state protected. They're overseen by the Department of Environmental Conservation. So the process for like altering the area around the road is more complicated. But you know, steps need to be taken, or else you know, like people aren't going to be able to use this road regularly.
Yeah, it seems like they either have to close the road. I mean, I'm talking, you know, eventually years and years from now. Or raise it, like make it into a bridge or something. Is there any talk about long-term solutions?
Well, I reached out and talked to both the DEC and the Department of Transportation. It's their road, the Department of Transportation. Neither were super forthcoming about it. I mean, it just the larger picture. Everyone's kind of behind, and I'm not just talking about like people in Hudson or New York State, but the nation is kind of behind in addressing climate change, and this is just one example of it. You know, they're still working on, you know, like the train lines that run up and down the river. Those are going to be compromised, and there's still not a set-in-stone solution about what they're going to be doing about that, and I mean, I feel that's more of a major issue, so I mean, things need to happen. And, you know, I mean, like the state and other people are certainly taking steps, but, I mean, neither organization revealed to me that, there was like a plan about how to fix this.
And, while one road is, through the South Bay is flooding, there is now plans to build another road in the South Bay.
Yeah. That's, that leads to the other related story, which has to do with, the Hall Road, Colarusso and Sons Hall Road. For anyone who doesn't know, A. Colarusso's and Sons is a large local, I don't know, that contradicts itself, but you know, they're a large business in the county.
They get many county contracts and Hudson City contracts and such.
Oh yeah. They have a lot of contracts with the county. I believe they have county contracts in a more limited way with other counties, but you know, they're kind of like a very established, storied company in Columbia County. They've been around for decades and decades, family owned. Paul Colarusso, the current owner, I think he's the grandson of the founder. Don't quote me on that. Well, I said it, so I wasn't quoted. But at any rate, this issue has been going on for a long time. Basically, Colarusso's wants to expand a haul road that goes off this road in question, Route 25B9G, so it can take two-way traffic. Currently, what happens is these large dump trucks, many, many tons, they use both the Hall Road and city streets to go back and forth from their docks on the Hudson waterfront. They want to expand the Hall Road to two lanes so the dump trucks can go, so that's the only road they need to use. I should make the point that they will still be able to use city streets with the current agreement with Hudson's planning board. They're going to be limited to, I believe, 60 days a year in doing this. So it's not like they don't have the option of using city streets. They said they would only use it if, you know, something was going on, one of which is if that road is flooded. So, yeah, that's how they interrelate. So at any rate, the planning board, the Hudson Planning Board, decided to allow the expansion of the Hall Road. And then a few days ago, a lawsuit was filed by three small local groups based in Hudson that took issue with the planning board's decision. It's what's known as an Article 78 lawsuit, which is when you sue like a municipality, like a government entity. They make the argument that essentially the planning board never passed their plan through this local board that is a city board, the Coastal Consistency Board, I believe it's called. This board it doesn't exist. Like, not that it's not supposed to exist. It's in city code that it was supposed to be set up, but like the group never exists, has never met, that kind of thing, and the planning board never submitted this proposal to them. So the argument that the three groups are making is that the planning board's decision is illegitimate because they did not get an okay from this group. There's a couple other nuances to it, but basically that A, the planning board never submitted their plan to this board, and B, the plan itself is against the local waterfront revitalization program, which is this plan, if you will, about how Hudson's waterfront should exist in future years. And another wrinkle, the LWRP, the plan, was submitted to the state many years ago, but the state never approved it. So it's been adopted as local law and is local law, but has not been approved by the state. But that doesn't mean that the local law does not apply. And that's the argument that the lawsuit makes.
So what is there a timeline on the lawsuit? It'll take months, I guess?
Oh, you know, there's no sort of timeline on it. I wrote this on Tuesday. At that time, the city and the planning board's attorney had not received the lawsuit, so they couldn't even comment on it yet. I was able to get a copy, and, you know, it's quoted in the article, but they don't even know what their move is yet. So, I mean, it's impossible to say what a timeline should be.
And this is one of those Hudson issues that's been going on for years, and no matter how it was decided or the outcome, there would be some group that would be aggrieved and upset about it.
Yeah, because it's not like an issue that like all of Hudson is against the Hall Road. That definitely is not the case. Some people in Hudson want the Hall Road because they want the trucks that currently go through the city, and they go through like more low income parts of the city and residential areas, and they view it as a climate justice issue. The anti-Hall Road people argue that there's another way of accomplishing this, such as altering the state route, because the trucks go up the state route in Hudson. And there's been attempts to get the state route moved. D.D. Barrett was involved in that, our assembly member. So this argument's back and forth, and they involve like some kind of storied Hudson figures, Peter Young and Sam Pratt are involved in the kind of anti-Hall Road movement. Linda Mussman is wanting to get the Hall Road constructed because the trucks go through her kind of district or ward, rather. She's a ward supervisor in the city.
Yeah, so it's a complicated issue with many different sides that seems to be never ending in Hudson.
Oh yeah, I mean it's been going on for so long. It's a very complicated issue. I mean, there's been multiple lawsuits. you know, there's been people challenging the outcomes of the lawsuit. It's been going on for like a decade at this point. So yeah, it's difficult to write these articles because you're like, do I put like all the background in? Well, then it would be a novel, so I gotta summarize. But yeah, it's an immensely complicated issue, it's not gonna be solved in the next little bit.
And then you were also in Greene County this week?
Yeah, I was. Sad story. A woman was shot Greenville in Greene County. She was shot, as the police say, in the pelvic area. She was at a home in Greenville when, you know, the shooting occurred. The police arrested a man. The woman was, at least 32, and the man was in his 60s. They were just acquaintances, according to Greene County Sheriff Kuzminski. She was very badly injured. They had to apply, like, a tourniquet. Sheriff's deputies had to apply a tourniquet to her. And then they had to drive her to a landing site, and then she was taken by helicopter to Albany. She was in her condition was like the injuries were life threatening. She's not fine now, but she will survive at this point. She's in stable condition. The interesting wrinkle to this story is this home has seen a lot of violence. In late 2022, there was a home invasion robbery at this house. Six men, some of which were armed, broke into the house, tied up the occupants and robbed them. All six of them were eventually arrested, four pretty immediately. The fifth, the police would not say like how they picked them up. The sixth wasn't arrested till months later, in April 2023. They were picked up by U.S. Marshals in Vermont. So all six have been arrested, but, you know, it's, I wouldn't want to live there.
Were the two incidents at all related, have the police said?
They have not said whether they are related or not. I cannot say I know if they were related, but one can make certain inferences about what might have been going on there. There's not like a direct line from one incident to the other now.
All right, and anything you are working on for next week?
What am I working on for next week? Interesting history article about one of the original Palatine Germans who settled the area. I'm working on something today that's a surprise, and I can't tell you about it. Sorry. Also early next week, I'm having a story coming about a dispute within the town of Coxsackie over another mine. This one's a slate mine, though, not a gravel mine. But it's pretty interesting because essentially the planning board and the code enforcement officer are having this standoff about whether this mine should be able to continue to operate. So those are coming in the next week.
All right. Thank you, Roger Hannigan-Gilson with the Times Union, for updating our listeners on what you've been working on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. We will talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. All right. Bye, Tom.
Next, let's tune in half Japanese with Put Some Sugar on It.
Let's do it one more time. Okay. One, two, three. Better. Come over here to my side.
didn't know what I had done. I know one thing and one thing only, that I need you and want you right over here. Put some sugar on it, honey. Put some honey on it, sugar. Silhouettes on the sand. One was a woman and one was a man. Two silhouettes on the sand. Put some sugar on it, honey. Put some honey on it, sugar. Salt over my right shoulder, and I'm throwing caution to the wind. Caution to the wind. Put some sugar on it, honey. Put some honey on it, sugar. I like it sweet, baby. I really do.
Here from New Zealand is the Tall Dwarfs with The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
I'm
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. January 21st was the 14th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, which opened the floodgates of money in political campaigns. In Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, over $300 million has already been spent in just three early races. CNN reports that $77 million was spent in the New Hampshire primary by super PACs, candidates, and political groups. New Hampshire's population is just 1.4 million people, and an estimated $55 in advertising was spent for every man, woman, and child in the Granite State. An estimated turnout of 410,000 voters calculates to $188 spent per primary vote. Democracy group End Citizens United said over $11 billion has been spent in federal elections since the 2010 court decision. Most spending in elections now comes not from candidates, but political action committees allied with them. End Citizens United notes that 96% of outside spending has occurred since the Citizens United decision. In the early Republican races alone, NPR reports that Nikki Haley's campaign spent $9.3 million, but her super PAC and Kochback Americans for Prosperity spent $62.8 million. The DeSantis campaign and PAC spent a combined $60 million, and Trump a combined $54 million. We have more on primary spending at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
This is Roxy Music with Just Another High.
Maybe your heart is aching. I wouldn't know, now would I? Maybe your spirit's breaking up. I shouldn't care, now should I? Maybe you're thinking of me. Well, I don't know, now do I? If only you knew how I feel. Wish I could die, now don't die. I'm just another crazy guy. Playing that love was another high. Just another high. You sigh as you waved goodbye.
Here is from the 2024 album Hard Banger Lovers, Volume 1 through 4, from Gushy. This is Summer Death.
kisses on collarbones,
searching
notes in
more love,
love understanding, demanding,
a flooding so sweet,
a rush of feelings coming over me, and it was
suffer free,
open your arms,
and it was heart
certain,
and it
towards the strong,
and it
your sway
down,
tone,
let your
grace shine,
the way it
held
the melody,
the way it
sung
the song,
it was
true
beauty,
and
I wanted
to dance,
and
it's
love,
and it's
freedom,
I wanted
to shine.
That was Irreversible Entanglements with the 2023 song Free Love from their Protect Your Light album.
Here is the title track from the 2023 album Oh Me, Oh My from Lonnie Holly. With a little help from REM's Michael Stipe, this is Oh Me, Oh My.
Sometimes I sit alone in the corner
Giving birth to baby after baby after baby after baby. And now I understand why she said these words. Oh, me. And oh, my. In a graceful manner, in a thankful way, every day that we have.
Holly on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
I feel my mind.